This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to what is season 9 of the Talking Split Podcast. Incredible that we have managed to get this far without being cancelled. I am Rob Colter, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. With me, I have Zoe Carr, the High Performance Coach for the Vic Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
And we have the man with his game face on. He's in countdown mode until AJ sees next week. Darren Best, the High Performance Coach for the Vic Metro Men and the Under 20 18 Head Coach. Starting next week, are we A-team or are we Navy team?
Navy team.
The winning team.
Yikes.
Putting it out there early.
We'll come back to that towards the end of the episode, potentially. So as a reminder, if you don't already follow this podcast, please do so right away. You will be notified when the show becomes available, which is usually on a Friday afternoon around about lunchtime, depending on if Brent remembers to upload it or not. First name check of the season for you, Brent. We'll see how you go. I'm sure you'll be better than Potter, though, so we're always appreciative of that. As always, we appreciate any likes, shares, retweets, anything you can do to throw the coaching assist to help grow the coaching podcast. For those of you curious, and I do get asked this a lot, we have been in a little bit of an off-season here. The gaze room heating has not been fixed. It remains warm in here, warmer than it should be in here.
It's not as hot as it's been, though.
Geez, it's relative.
It's warm.
Yeah, it's pretty warm.
I feel
warm
like
here.
I'm not sitting on the sun.
No. Well, geez,
that makes for a nice change.
That's not really the downgrade we were hoping for. We'll see how it goes over the course of this year as well. So it has been a fairly busy period. The high-performance calendar in that January, sort of March area, has been known for its bedlam-like opportunities for people to not necessarily go on holidays, but go and jump into high-performance tournaments. So, Bestie, we'll jump in with your crew first. So your first East Coast challenge, I believe?
In this role, yes. However, not my first one as a coach.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of an overview of what East Coast Challenge is, how it went for the Vic Metro athletes, all those sorts of fun things.
Yeah, sure. So we take two different age groups away. We take a top age 16s group, and then it also serves as our final selection for our under 18 Vic Metro state team. So we took two teams of 12 away for that. And the event itself is a development tournament, so it doesn't have finals like some of the other tournaments. And we basically, with the 18s, we use that as selection. So there's a lot on the line with that. And with the 16s, although it's good to get a look at those athletes, it's not a selection for state trials. It's more of a just an opportunity to go away with SDP. And it's always good to see kids in those environments. And some did well and some didn't off the court. And for us, it was really eye-opening for the kids that had missed stuff through COVID. So our top age 18 boys, for them, that was their first time representing Vic. And they were visibly nervous.
Was that due to the pump up you gave them beforehand about here are the expectations? Like, did you contribute to this nervous or did you alleviate the nervousness?
I probably contributed to it.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. That's what you're after.
Yeah. But also for the 16s, the top age 16s, they probably underperformed, I would say, from a competitive standpoint. And when we go back, they missed their under-14s through COVID.
Yeah, that's a club group chance for a good chunk of those kids, isn't it? It's probably the first time away from parents and having to be in an environment where there's expectations on how they perform.
Yeah, so obviously that tournament runs over 3 days, or that event runs over 3 days. It was served its purpose for us to pick our under-18 state team, which we're happy with. And then, a couple of athletes in the under-16 stood up and, put their name up in lights for us to think about, as we start our state trial process this weekend for 16s. And for some others, probably not so much.
Yep. And how was the bus trip?
I was lucky enough to only need to catch the bus one way. So I was away with my family. So I met the crew in Sydney.
Savvy veteran move there, Bestie. Yeah, like, don't do the bus both ways.
Yeah, not too bad. But the bus trip back, it was... Yeah, look, I'm not a big fan of McDonald's, but that was pretty much every stop that there was at a McDonald's. Yeah.
And speaking of people that have managed to navigate not having to go on the bus trips before, Zoe, your world does not consist of East Coast Challenge, obviously, with the country athletes. They go to Australian Country Junior Basketball
Cup.
I knew it was Cup or Championships. We live in a world of acronyms. I wasn't entirely sure which that C stood for. So Cup, how was Cup? What does it look like for the country athletes? What do they go through?
So ours is a little different. It's more of a tournament-based system and setup. So, you know, there's finals, etc., that play into that. But the athletes come in, and we use it for the 18s as well, much like Bestie does, to select our under-18s teams. But we take two under-14s, two under-16s, two under-18s teams to that tournament, you know, get as many games in as we can. And then there's obviously the finals at the end. The Vic Country girls did a really good job across the board. The thing I was the most pleased with, though, was the evolution, particularly of the under-14s coaches. We had some PD sessions before every day, which meant 6:45 starts for our PD, but they were great. They took everything on, and you saw, you know, because whilst it is a tournament that has finals, etc., you know, I'm always preaching, I don't care about the finals. I want you to develop these kids and develop yourselves, and, you know, particularly with the 18s, make sure you show us what we need to see to be able to make selection. But with the 14s, what was great was, you know, there was an example of one of the coaches, because I'm preaching, you know, yes, we can come down the right-hand side of the floor 90% of the time and we can get good looks at it or good scores, but that's not how the game is played, and I need you to start encouraging and demanding that we use both sides of the floor. And by the last game, you know, one of the coaches coached the best game of his week, which was great. And then at the end of it, when he was telling us about it, we said, "Did you win?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't even know." And that to me was perfect. It was, you know, because he was just in a strict developmental mindset, which was awesome. And as a result, the athletes then improved over the length of the week, so, or 5 days. So, yeah, really good experience, similar to Bestie. It was obvious that a lot of kids, it's their first time away, and particularly had missed out in those younger age groups, like the under-14s, missed out on, you know, academy, missed out on Jamboree, all that sort of stuff that really helps lay the foundations a little bit. So it was a really good first up for them. And, yeah, now it's just about catching up the athletes that struggled a little bit because of the new environment and the new expectations, and then obviously progressing the ones that managed it well.
So you both spoke about under-18 selections were at that for both of those tournaments. And I'm a big believer that's a great way to pick your team, is to play against meaningful competition from other states. I mean, they're the kids you're going to see when you go to an AJCs and those types of things as well. How do you select teams, I suppose, to go into that tournament? Like, do you focus on, oh, we just want to have two even teams? Do you stack one team versus having, I don't want to say a weaker team, but, you know, probably not quite as good a team? Do you have, say, the core of, look, we know these seven or eight kids going into that tournament are probably going to be our best seven or eight kids. That's going to be the bulk of them, and now we're only looking to fill three spots. How would you, I mean, Bestie, what did you guys do with the 18 boys? Like, how did you navigate that?
Yeah, we went two even teams.
Yep.
Yeah, we went two even teams, and we were also mindful of having a bottom age contingent to come along to make sure they'd experience that for the following year.
Because 18s will have bottom age kids involved in that, whereas 16s obviously have Southern Cross Challenge, so the 15 kids don't go
correct
to that one because it's a different process altogether. What did you do, Zoe, with yours?
Yeah, we had two even teams. We'd obviously had two pre-cup camps before that and SDP trials, which play a part in the 18s for state trials and state selections. So we have a bit of an idea of, you know, athletes that are likely to be selected. It's obviously not done and dusted, but likely at those that are on the bubble, and we make sure that they are spread evenly. You know, if we've got two, you know, point guards that are vying for one spot, we make sure that they're on opposite teams so we can see how they manage and see how they play, etc., and put them up against each other in games when we have the opportunity.
Because it can be a little bit of a myth, I suppose, that you get to the point of the week where you have team selection, you announce the teams, obviously, and, you know, with that comes pros and cons, of course, but you normally get, oh, but my child was on the team that won all of their games, how come they didn't make it? And it's like, yeah, that's not really what this is for, though. Like, it's not necessarily about they won all their games or they had 22 points in this game, so therefore they should have made it. It's the whole body of work over the course of the week.
I didn't have any of that.
Really?
Not the pretty winning. Good. No, not the – because for us, the 16s and 18s, it was an all Vic country final in both, so that was helpful.
Yeah, both teams are but successful.
Maybe,
last
yeah,
year.
Maybe yep. if it was different, maybe if one team was in the final and another wasn't, maybe.
Yep.
But yeah, it was pretty good.
Yep, that's not too bad. So coming into that, you both spoke about the off court, so to speak. What were the expectations for the athletes off the court from your end? I know, Zoe, you probably had a lot of meetings on that end, and Country Cup has run a lot in the same sort of format, as in the tournament's the same, the accommodation is always the same. What are the things that you would be expecting of your athletes off the court?
So they are obviously expected to be punctual, that's number one, and follow all of their instructions. It's a massive effort for the staff that are looking after the athletes. So behaviour is huge and is something that we keep an eye on too. So, you know, if there's poor behaviour, those athletes will be swiftly removed from the program in general, maybe, you know, from if it's – thankfully we haven't been down this road yet, but, you know, removed from the program, removed from state selection, all those sort of things. So there is a recovery element to what they do as well, and we make sure that, you know, they're looking after their bodies, they're learning about how to fuel themselves, all those sort of things, but also learning how to be a little bit more self-sufficient. So whilst they have team managers and camp managers as well that are there to help them if they need to, it's also a case of making sure they're aware that, you know, there's got to be some things that you take care of yourself, and the coaches have individual player meetings at the beginning of the week, particularly with 18s, and to lay out expectations of what they need to see for them from them. Midweek of where some improvements need to happen, and then there's obviously feedback provided if requested. So, yeah, it's a massive – from a coaching perspective, obviously the coach PD is non-negotiable. They have to be at all of that. And then, you know, making sure they're at games and following through on that.
Yep. Bestie, I'm going to assume fairly similar. Like, how important are those coach-player meetings in particular when you go to these sorts of tournaments?
Definitely with the 18s, because yep. selection is at hand, and we like to have those conversations because ECC is 3 days. We'd like to have that conversation with the kids that or the athletes that really need to show something after day one, you know, to give them time to make change. We addressed all of our athletes on night one, you know, once they all arrived, about behaviours and expectations. And I have to say, based on poor behaviour, I've removed two boys from our SDP program, and subsequently they're now ineligible for the under-16 state team because of their behaviour. They weren't in their room at curfew time and then were deceitful about it, so we removed them, and we don't play around with any of that. You know, our program is high performance, and it is a snapshot to see how kids are going to behave when we take them away. And I know Zoe in a previous podcast had spoke about their, you know, 18 or 19 hour layover in Manila. You know, we've got to be able to trust you. So just a warning shot to everybody else out there, really, like, you know, you need to set your ground rules. And, you know, apart from that, it was the behavior was good. The challenges this year for us at East Coast Challenge was the first time we normally stay at a private school, and we've got sort of a dorm set up, but the venue where it was hosted was moved, so that accommodation was no longer viable. So we're split across a few hotels. So, you know, that just shows some sort of adversity, like what Zoe was talked about with her Oz stuff, that we're always evaluating you in everything you do. Yeah.
And you don't go out of your way to be particularly, like, you don't put anyone in harm's way or anything like that. Like, you're not trying to make them uncomfortable. It's just you're away from your family, you're away from your friends, you're in an environment that's fairly foreign to you. It's going to be uncomfortable just naturally.
Yeah.
Like, and you want to know how kids respond to that. Like, you want to know which ones are going to sulk and pout and go off and be their own thing. But it doesn't mean you're not going to pick them just because they're unhappy in their environment. If they can still make it work, well, that's kind of a sign of maturity for a lot of these kids too.
Well, here's a great example. So one of our hub leads came up to help with some of the running of the event for us and was doing room checks. Curfew or lights out was 10 o'clock. And this hub lead went and knocked on an athlete's door at 8:30, Went in there. It was the last night. Bags were packed. The athlete was asleep. Goes to some other athletes' rooms after 10 o'clock. They're up. They're out of their room. That athlete that was asleep 2 days later was in Paris for the NBA Global Academy. Luke Fennell.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, there's it? Connection there with that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It can't be coincidence.
No.
Like it's, you know, if you are prepared when you go to these sorts of things, they will help you. So just out of curiosity, from a play perspective, what were some of the areas you felt from watching East Coast Bestie, like what were some of the areas that you felt were above the line, below the line, need some work? What can coaches out there that potentially are involving coaching some of these age groups, what can they be working on with athletes to give them the best chance moving forward of some success?
Yeah, defensive transition is still an issue. And we kind of talk about it a lot with the gameplay of the VJBL. It's either, a lot of the time, it's run back or zone press. We need to see more full court man-to-man because not only were teams scoring easily in transition, when there was pressure up the floor, it wasn't handled great. So there's two sides to that. That definitely would be the biggest one. And then that flows into individual defensive containment. You know, the scoring at East Coast was not a problem. You know, there was games in the 80s and the 90s. Most of it was on the defensive end.
Yep.
And they were 8 minute quarters too.
Yeah, okay. So what was that? Was that not being clear enough on where help defense was supposed to be? Was that not being able to just contain the ball on the dribble? Was it like pass and cut stuff? Like where did it sort of break down for a lot of the teams?
Yeah, a lot of it was just one-on-one individual containment. And that's not just for us. That's across all states that were there. A lot of it's just individual containment and it's accountability from, you know, constant accountability. And we'll talk about this a little bit after NPC, but when we talk about NPC. But the biggest thing is our messaging is constant. It's what happens in between when we see them.
Yep. It makes a valid point. Like it's not, I suppose, acceptable to be an elite defender when you go and play against other elite kids, but then just sort of go, look, it doesn't matter because this is my VJBL game. Like, this is a constant mentality and mindset that really needs to be kept up. And for the coaches out there that have these athletes, you have to reinforce this. Like, you're actually hurting the athlete by not coaching them in this area. What about you, Zoe? Like, what did you see up at Cup that sort of stood out for you?
We had an emphasis and have had an emphasis in the country girls program for a while on the defensive end. It's nowhere near where it needs to be yet, but it was a point of difference for us. We were holding teams to much lower scores, which as a result, because from a critical point of view, spacing became an issue at times offensively, especially while we're trying to run motion-based offenses and read and react-based offenses. We still went back into the washing machine a little too much of, you know, penetrate, two dribbles, pick up, pass, next person, two dribbles, pick up, pass. So that's what I mean by getting into the washing machine. So when things didn't quite work out offensively, that's sort of what we still fell back into that habit, which is something we've been working on, so it is a little disappointing, but obviously something that needs more attention and we just continue to work. But while they were starting or trying to figure out the offense, figure out where they sat in it, figure out how they could score through it, all that sort of stuff, our defense was holding up at the other end, which helped us tick the scoreboard over until towards the back end of the week we started to get it together. So can't echo Bestie hard enough, like, you know, in VJBL, it might cost you games in the beginning because you're not good at it, but we need to see more straight-up man-to-man, hard-nosed defense to give these athletes the best chance to progress.
Yep. All right, so you're both saying the same thing. The defense needs to be better, guarding the ball. What are your three main points of emphasis guarding the ball? Like, what would you...
On the dribble?
Give me anything. Just anything? Like, completely up to you. Just so coaches know exactly what you guys expect from them as well, and they can potentially re-emphasize those points.
Well, for mine, so in a transition point of view, if you're on the ball, pin it to a sideline, but don't give them sideline. So we sometimes say pin to the sideline, they're happy to run beside them. It's not really the case, but it's we're not allowing them back towards the middle and we're not allowing them to cross the split line. So we're keeping them there. From a on the ball perspective in the half court, closeouts, like everything closeouts. And you know, we're living in self-preservation mode at the moment and forcing teams to shoot the three, which again plays into a deficiency in the younger age groups. So yes, it's successful, 100%. But we need to challenge those athletes to be able to get touch distance, hand above the ball on every closeout in a stance to be able to then defend penetration once you've taken care of the ball. So it's take care of the shot, then take care of penetration. And if you end
that's up applying pressure, not just gapping way, way, way back, because it's like you can't go past me now because I'm 4 feet away from
correct.
You. Like
that's what I mean. That's what pressure. I talk about when I say self-preservation mode. That's, you know, because I mean, I've watched even just in through grading VJBL games, and it's everything's trying to get on the rim. Everything is, you know, put the ball to the floor, put the ball to the floor. So I understand why they're doing it. And like I said, it does play into a deficiency, particularly in the younger age groups. So that has got to be an emphasis. And then once the ball does go to the floor, to push points. So push points are huge. Not allowing to just open the gate. I don't know what it's like on the boys' side as much, but on the girls' side, you know, we're getting better at taking the chest blow, but once we take the chest blow, we open the gate and allow them a lane to the rim, and we're happy to just ride their hip. So it's got to be take that chest blow, and then we gap off again and we drop our hips and we're ready to play, and we send them to our push points, which are, you know, short corners, over elbows or outside elbows. Behind the when I say behind the backboard, not teams are really good playing through the Nash zone, so it's got to be behind the backboard and then pinned. So once they cross the split line, you got to pin them to that baseline and not allow them to, you know, particularly on the girls' side, pivot, 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 and then come up with a reverse layup. You got to hold them there and either put pressure on keyway. Violation pressure on them, but also the only option they have is to pass. Now, if you were to give me a fourth point, I would then say vision on both the ball and your player, because we do a great job of that, and they pick the ball up and they pivot and then somebody cuts and we're watching the ball, and it happens far too often. So they'd probably – I've got a lot more points, but they'd probably be my four.
3+1, bestie. You can have as many as you want, it turns out.
Yeah, well, I think it just sort of builds from that. I know for us on the boys' side, it's engagement off the ball. And I've been using the saying a little bit lately around, are you participating or are you observing? And, you know, that rings true with rebounding as well. But – just maybe defending an action into a closeout is something that we struggled with, or having to navigate one or two passes off the ball, then it's my turn to close out. So that engagement off the ball is something that needs to improve on. And as you move up levels, that gets quicker and the distance you have to cover is further and all of those types of things. So that then fed into the one-on-one containment. And then we spoke about this as a HP cohort around a lot of drills that we do start with being beat, you know, to build offensive decision making. So it's almost like, well, I tried. Next man up. Come and help me.
Yep. And you almost just put it in the mentality that I will be beaten off this regard. Yeah. And I get why, because it also helps our rotation defense and all that sort of stuff.
But yeah.
Yeah, the lack of a closeout in some of our drills does hurt us.
It does. Yeah, it does. And there was, you know, I keep going back to it, but at National Performance Camp on the boys' side, it was overemphasized around you've got to get out to it, touch the ball, don't even chop your feet type stuff. Just get out there because of the power of the three at the international game and all of those at those high levels.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, it's interesting you both hit on closeouts, and it is a vital thing. And I know Ash was on it for a while when he was here. Zep was absolutely on it when he was here as well. It is clearly a massive issue amongst a lot of our playing group to not be able to close the ball out with pressure.
Well, we just sent out our points of emphasis and session plan templates for SDP and FDP. And let's just say there's some closeouts and some shell and, you know, defending off the ball, off ball movement, or defending a screen away into a closeout. Yep. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with still incorporating that into gameplay. Like, it is actually better when it's gameplay rather than just player on the 3-point line, we'll pitch him the ball and we'll close it out.
Oh,
play
it's definitely that, like, yeah.
It needs to be some live stuff of sometimes you don't know when you're going to have to go and close out because you've been caught in a rotation or you've switched out somewhere and all of a sudden you're the closest person to the ball. You have to go get it. So the closeout stuff, I don't anticipate that going away anytime soon. I feel like we're going to be talking about it for a while.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, you know,
just before you keep going, the resigned sigh from both of you then of sums it up perfectly.
Well, the D-trans too, you know, like I touched on earlier, and just an understanding and clarity around what's important.
Yep.
You know, ball first, basket second, get it to the sideline, keep it to the sideline, you know.
I think it's really important to remember, you know, I had a session in Ballarat last night and it was predominantly defensive focused. It wasn't just defense, so we certainly didn't do like mass slide drill or anything like that. I don't know. But
I hope not.
But it was still through gameplay and all those sort of things, but it was just the emphasis was on the defensive side of the ball, and it was messy. Like, it was hard. It was a grind to get through because you might get one good one and then you get three ordinary ones because, you know, no two possessions are exactly the same and they're trying to figure it out. And I think sometimes we get caught as coaches. I know in my younger coaching days I would have done this. If it was not working exactly how I wanted to, I'd probably go away from it. Whereas this needs constant reinforced reps. Like, it's got to be, you know, we just stuck with. And you saw at times, I was like, oh, we hate having to do these many, you know, defend this cut and then defend this closeout. But they're not going to get better at it if we keep bailing them out and saying, okay, let's move on to something fun that, you know, you want to do. By the time they then get onto the offensive side of that drill, they've forgotten that they hated the defensive side. But you know, we do say embrace the chaos and all that sort of stuff. Teaching the defensive side of the ball is a grind, but it is a responsibility of all of us. And without those reps, those athletes aren't going to get better at it.
Yep. And defining what a win is as well. As you know, I think when we see pressure defense on a Friday, it's the desired outcome is just a steal. You know, and I think part of that is shot clock issues, definitely on an offensive rebound with it still resetting to 24. But, you know, just trying to define, you know, hey, this a negative pass is a win. A one dribble pickup is a win. It doesn't have to be, you know, they get it over half court and it's just hit 16 seconds on the shot clock. That's a win. You know, those, and I think we as coaches need to do a better job of rewarding those things when we're doing our scoring in our small-sided games.
Like, it makes a lot of sense. So you're both at Southern Cross. We managed to get you guys in the same gym at the same time.
Yeah.
Zoe, you had two teams in 14s and 15s?
Yeah, is two right? In 14s, two in 15s.
Yep. What did you guys have, Bestie, on the Metro side?
Yeah, we carried the load. We had six teams there. So we had two under 14s and then four under 15 boys groups. Yep.
Damn, that's a lot of kids. Yep. So how did that go? Like, what were the big things that you sort of looked at from Southern Cross? Was there any correlation between Southern Cross and Cup? Obviously, the 14s were in the same age group, so you've got to see a little bit of that. But what were the big things you noticed there, Zoe?
So for us, SEC is, and with no disrespect to anybody intended, we come to SEC and we get punched in the face, and that is on. We want that. So we have a lot of athletes that, you know, maybe aren't playing VJBL yet because some of them don't start till 16s and all that sort of stuff. So it's eye-opening. The evolution through the tournament, though, was fantastic, I thought, from the country girls and the coaches. I think, you know, just the competitive, you know, especially when we play like the Metros, et cetera, just that competitive edge that they have because it's, you know, been built into them since under, like, bottom age under 12, sometimes double bottom age and triple bottom age. So that's really a massive eye-opener. So watching them have to then navigate that whilst trying to then implement style of play, again, it becomes a bit of a grind. But, you know, the coaches were fantastic. They ended up, you know, really developing the athletes and had that development focus. You know, I did have to remind parents and coaches at times, I could not care if you do not make the final. I don't care about the finals. Stay, like, if you make the finals, I probably won't be happy with you because it means some kids are going to have sat, or, you know, I want you to just keep that focus on development because that is what that tournament is about. So making sure that, you know, they stayed the course on that, and they did a great job. So, you know, for us in offensive transition, you know, staying off sidelines was a problem. You know, we dribbled straight to sidelines, which made us then trap a ball.
It's a bit of a young person
thing. And again, it's everything, all of the identified issues are all similar to what I said before, self-preservation. So, you know, defensively, we're not getting out to the ball close enough. You know, we're not that touch distance away. And when we do, we're not in any sort of stance to be able to defend that. And again, like we mentioned, this is 14s and 15s. They're the age group that missed their cup. Their jamboree. And they missed academy and all that sort of stuff. So this is probably the last year we can use that as an excuse because we're back on board now. But all those foundation, it was evident that those foundations were missing. Yep. From these athletes across the board, but it's something we'll work on and catch them up.
Yep. What about your crew, Bestie? What did you see?
So from a boys' standpoint, once we were done with East Coast, I was really excited for SEC because our O10s and our O9s, so our 14s and 15s, were the first group that got to do the new version of FDP. So they had that through Metro, and it showed. I know it's not all about the finals, but for us on the 15 standpoint to take four teams through and still have an all-metro grand final, if you want to call it that, speaks to some depth that we're building in that age group, some competitiveness. And there were some really, really good games. And also on the 14s as well, it was pleasing to see some shot-making, decision-making, and, you know, obviously just to echo what Zoe said about our coaches, they did a great job. You know, we had conversations after most games around things to improve on, you know, and it was, you know, funnily enough, you know, Sam, I love her. She's fantastic. You know, they'd have it arguably what most people would say is a great game because it was a big win, but she was like, we've got to get better at this, this and this, you know, and her team continued to just excel throughout the week, which was really good. But yeah, just pleased for the tournament to be back for one, or the event, but then to see the correlation from what we have been doing from FDP into those athletes is quite pleasing, that it is starting to, I guess, filter through. So really pleased with that. And you know, some size as well. You know, definitely some size in our O9 age group, which is good.
How did you go managing those expectations of players, parents, athletes of don't get caught up in the win? Like, you're allowed to win games. Like,
of course.
No one's suggesting you tank to a point where you can't win. But how did you go managing those expectations? Like, did that start with the coach? Did that start with you? Like, where did that come from?
So I put guidelines out to all of our coaches prior to the event. And it very specifically said, I do not expect to be talking to you about playing time for athletes. We basically said, even playing time, last 5 minutes, go for it. That's what we said. And the coaches, for the most part, you know, it rang true. Like, they just subbed through as we would hope. And we tried some kids in some different positions, which we hoped we tried to do as well. And then we had a prep day prior to, and we just spoke to the athletes about what the tournament's for. It's not necessarily about winning, but it's about, you know, just being involved in the HB pathway, learning how to play a different way to what I guess they do regularly. And, you know, for us on the Metro side of it, winning was a byproduct of that. It wasn't necessarily the end goal. Yep. And that's why, you know, at the start of the podcast, I was joking about the Navy team being the winning team.
Joking. Remember this comment. Yeah, we'll come back to that. But it is one of those things too, which is very difficult to manage expectations, because from a lot of them, it is, when I say them, parents, players, etc., they turn up. They have Vic Metro or Vic Country written across their chest. They get super
Bushies and goldies.
My bad. Sorry, I'll come back. But it is one of those things, they get super excited because it's their first ability, in most cases, to represent something more than their club or their association in that. So it is a highly excitable thing. Obviously, there's a financial implication too, and it's like, well, if you're going to pay this money, you want to go and perform as best you possibly can too. And that's why, I mean, there were guidelines in about no, like, zone presses, like no going and just beating down on people in the full court or anything like that with a development focus. And you know, it is difficult to sometimes pull that back because, again, kids are competitive. They want to go and just run and trap and press and all that sort of stuff. But so are coaches. Like having to manage coaching expectations, because this was a great opportunity for a lot of our up-and-coming coaches to get involved for probably the first time. It's a good chance for some of our more experienced coaches to come back in and help the next generation of athlete and coach as well. This was a great opportunity for a lot of these coaches to get some game reps that they may not get. And I mean, you talk about it a fair bit, Zoe. Like, for country coaches, they just don't get the opportunity to game coach enough in comparison to those that are involved in VJBL and the like. So for them, this is a huge opportunity to get their feet, you know, in the important seats and coaching some of their best kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we do, and it could work. It is required for everybody, but definitely for country coaches who, you know, there aren't as many games to be, especially at that sort of level, to be able to be involved in. So it is a good first step for them into the pathway. And you know, things that we make sure we do in our PD is, you know, I'll just throw a scenario at them, because how often are we in them? And I threw a scenario at them on the first night, and we talked through what you would do, how you would do it, and why. And then that very next day, one of the coaches was in that exact position. So then when I was able to ask her what fueled your thought process, she was able to tell me. And it didn't work out for her, but it didn't mean it was wrong. Like, her decision-making was actually very good.
Yeah, it's trial and error stuff, but still, yeah, for a coach, isn't it?
Yeah, so, as I always say to all of them, as long as you've got reasoning behind what you've got to say and you've thought that through, I'm not going to, you know, question you or you know, make you feel horrible about that. So, you know, it's a really good opportunity for all coaches, really, to step into that with less pressure, but probably more pressure than they're normally used
to. Better athletes.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I find a lot of coaches that jump into this for the first time that might be very good club-level coaches and those types of things. They come in and the things they would usually be picking up their athletes on aren't there to be picked up because they're better kids.
Yeah.
So now you've got to look at the game a little bit deeper. How do I go and actually impact on this? How can I make that player better that's actually already pretty good? Like, what do I have to look at now? And that next level of development for our coaches, I think, is vital.
Spot on about looking deeper into it. You know, I had a example of a coach saying, oh, nobody wants to bring the ball up the floor. No one's capable of bringing the ball up the floor, when the problem wasn't the ball handler. The problem was nobody was getting open. And so there were no other options but for them to bring the ball up the floor, which made it harder for them because defense can now climb in and all that sort of stuff. So again, that opportunity for education, we just, especially on the countryside, we just don't have enough opportunities to get the coaches where they are and work on that as much as possible, because all the coaches that we have involved are all doing, you know, 55,000 things at their club as well. They're, you know, they're coaching multiple teams and they're doing
committee member,
yeah, and which is unbelievable. Yep. It is so good. It just means that our opportunity then to have those coach education moments are restricted to things like tournaments.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So wrapping up January, we finally got to that. We got through the tournaments and all those types of things, and we go into National Performance Camp, so NPC, for those of you not following along with the acronyms that we've thrown at you over the last 38 minutes to this point. Bestie, you were on the boys' side for this one.
Yep.
How did it go? What were the things you took away from it? What are the massive points of emphasis that you really saw that you'll implement into the high-performance pathway here, but things for the coaches to be aware of too?
Training standards, or practice standards, is probably the biggest one. On the boys' side, there's no surprise how competitive it is up there in that environment daily, with the addition of the Global Academy athletes and preparation leading into an event like that. There's a 10-point conditioning program that all the invited athletes were required to complete and report on, and compliance with that was not at the level required, and I wouldn't necessarily say it directly resulted into, but it was probably no surprise that there was quite a few athletes breaking down and needing work from the physio throughout the camp. You know, the sessions were grueling, as they should be. You know, best kids, best coaches in that environment. So practice standards and the no downtime part of practice was the biggest takeaway that I would say. We had quite a few Vic network coaches through our, I guess, nominations were able to go up and observe, and that was consistent across them. Like, wow, just the pace of practice, the expectation of practice was quite high. A heavy defensive focus still, and just a competitive toughness thing, which was all around international effort. You know, often Robbie, who was leading the camp, would refer to, would this beat Spain? Would this beat Croatia? Would this, you know, that those types of comments were made, which was great to say, you know, this is what it's going to take to win a bronze medal at the Olympics, or, you know. So that was great. Obviously, the best kids, legitimate size, you know, across the camp. You know, I did some positional work with the posts there on the bag, and I could have easily had a physio session myself.
You didn't go through the team point conditioning before you got there?
I didn't, yeah. But yeah, from that standpoint, just really pleasing to see that camp back, because we haven't had it for a while. And for coaches and for the athletes, and it just reiterates what we've been saying. Like, there was a lot of stuff around closeouts, containment, and then just international style of play offensively, which we've been implementing through our stuff anyway.
Yep. So when you say the competitiveness out there, how did that get driven? Was that driven by coaches, or was that driven by like a core group of athletes that were just more competitive than others? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, great question. Initially, it was the coaches. However, there was 1, 2, 3 athletes that had gone to the last under 17 World Cup as bottom ages that are now top age 18s that were, let's say, strategically put in groups is how it just seemed to be that way. So Ash did the group, so I assume that was the case. So a lot of the times when there was questioning towards a group around would this get it done, it was directed at that athlete that had been there. So largely coach driven to begin with, but over the course of the 5 sessions, it really built to the point where it was self driven yep. by the athletes. And this is what I touched on earlier around, we had the ability to do that at camp because there was nothing in between, you know. So we'll pull our kids in here on a Monday night or a Wednesday night or Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, whatever it might be. But in between that and us seeing them again, they go off to whatever other levels they have. And we really need there to be no drop off with consistency of message and standards.
Yep. Makes a lot of sense. So you were on the women's side of the program. What were the big things you took away from that? How did it go? What did it look like? All those fun things.
Pretty much all the same as what Bestie had. We also had an emphasis on post feeds and using the post out of pick and roll or in transition. So we had similar, we had legitimate size there across the board, which was great. We did have issues with athletes breaking down. I think we started with 27 athletes or 28 athletes and at one stage had 14 on the floor. So thankfully that fluctuated though. We ended up getting back up to about 26, which was good. So that, you know, I guess being familiar with the environment and expectations and not just expectations from what you need to do, you know, when you go to get a drink, it's not, you're not walking and then hanging out for 10 seconds and having a chat. Like, you get your drink and you're back on floor and all that sort of stuff, but also physically what's expected of you. So, you know, that was a challenge at times, but the improvement in using the posts and then as a result, the improvement in the posts was, from a skill set perspective, was notable. Yep. You could start, it was clear that a lot of post players are used to just having to rebound and run, and
doesn't end that's up with kinda them all that
it.
Often.
Yep. Yeah. So once they started to get it a bit more, you said, oh, look, this is pretty cool. So
do you feel like it's an issue? And I'll sort of come back to this in a second, but do you feel like it's an issue for a lot of our better athletes? They tend to be the bigger athletes and they almost get lumped in the posts just by default. But when they go up to the next level, they're no longer a post. Like they tend to be more of a wing or a, you know, a big guard or whatever the case may be.
It's a massive issue because we, as court coaches, we're often given athlete groups to provide their feedback on at these camps. So you might have 3 or 4 athletes. And often it's a conversation for those athletes around developing a perimeter package. Like it's very, very common, I would say. On the boys' side, I don't know about...
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to be big anymore. Everyone's, you know, I've got to be a 3. I've got to be a 3. Now, in this camp, though, in fairness, we had probably 5 or 6 or so athletes that were legitimately 6'4", 6'5" and above. So that they are big. Like,
yeah, they're
no
not coming
team.
Back to, yeah. to carry the ball at club level.
So, you know,
why not?
Obviously.
Well,
yeah, well.
Geez, don't open that can.
But that's probably another pod about yep. what sort of athlete are they? Because if you are 6'7", but you move like you're 5'10", exactly right, Bestie, why not? But if you are in the women's game, if you are 6'4" or 6'5" and you move like you're 7'4", you have to be a big and stick with that. Where we tend to, you know, try and make everybody and project what they're going to be and all this sort of stuff. You know, be the best big you can be if you're at that height. Because at the end of the day, by continually trying to move athletes down the line, and what I mean by that is from 5 to 4, 4 to 3, 3 to... It's going to be really difficult to get there if their levers and their body don't allow it. So I think we've got to look a little deeper before we start making those sort of... But again, that's probably another pod.
Yep, makes sense. So we've spoken a lot about things that need to be fixed and improved on and those types of things. So what were some of the things that were good? Like you think about coming out of that camp environment, what were some of the things that you thought collectively across the board were actually really good?
From skill set?
Yeah.
I think they shot the ball very well, actually. It was surprising. Oh, not surprising. That's probably unfair. But the level that they were able to shoot the ball, the thing that needed to probably improve in that area was willingness to then shoot the ball. So having to constantly drive that, hey, that's your shot, you're open, you shoot that. You know, the ball comes inside to you and you're at the tip of the charge circle, that's yours, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, but probably the biggest thing, and it's not so much a skill set, was the ability to understand and then implement, or at least attempt to implement, you know, like even skill sets that they're not comfortable with, or, you know, concepts they're not comfortable with, they were still able to then put that on the floor and do what they could with it, which isn't something that you see a lot of on the girls' side, because they want to be compliant, they want to do everything right and all that sort of stuff. So that was actually really quite pleasing to see. Their willingness to play in pace was good in pace phase. They wanted to run, they wanted to kick the ball ahead. And that's where you started to see the evolution of those bigs, like I mentioned before, because now when they're rim running, they're getting rewarded. And so it encouraged them to continue that and then helped offensive transition immensely. So yeah, they were probably the things that I took away that I thought were pretty impressive.
Yep. What about you, Bestie, on the board side?
As the camp went on, the communication really lifted,
yep.
which then led to a lot of problem solving, definitely defensively, because there was a large focus on that, as we talked about earlier. I think from a perimeter play standpoint, the playing off 2 was quite good. And that was actually, we talked about this in our meeting this morning, it was pretty good through other January events as well. So pleased with that. But I agree with Zoe. There was a good level of skill when it came to shooting, but the shot selection, at times you would sort of think, oh, that's the one, you should, you know, yeah. you should let it go.
It's interesting you both said the same thing in that yeah. they probably should have taken more shots rather than they're taking too many shots. Because usually we talk about shot selection wasn't quite where it needed to be.
Oh, we had a couple of them.
Oh, right. Well, look, yeah. you're never completely out of the woods.
Yeah,
in that
they
one.
Still existed, yeah. but yeah. that probably plays into a nervousness of where they were and the occasion and the environment. So, you know, on the girls' side, again, they don't want to make a mistake. So if they shoot and miss, they believe that's an error, even though that's the right shot to take, a predictable shot that we can now try and rebound. But, yeah, that was all a part of the teaching and learning for them.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. So we alluded to it before. Bestie, you are on court next week. Head coach of your first Victorian team. You've done it for a couple of other states, and finally we've got you in navy blue and white.
Yep.
Who are you looking forward to playing? How do you anticipate your team going? Where should we be looking for you on the Sunday? Those types of things.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously the Navy team is, this year we're all bottom age. So there's, you know, obviously we've had some, we've got some athletes that have been to a Nationals before. We've got some that have never been to a Nationals before. So that'll have some challenges. We've got a limited prep, which, you know, 20s sort of is. But we're building at the moment. We've got, we had our last camp on the weekend and we've got a scrimmage this week before we head off. I think the Navy team is designed to not only expose some kids that have never been before to a Nationals, but maybe showcase some others. And most recently last year, obviously, John Furphy played really well for us in the Navy team and ended up with a scholarship up in Canberra. So that's the byproduct of it. Who am I looking forward to playing the most? Well, obviously, we've got a very tough first day with the Global Academy and WA back-to-back. But I'm hopeful to get in some sort of crossover where we play the other Vic team, right? That's,
ooh, there it is.
That would be great.
The grudge match.
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, we're, you know, obviously when we pick the Navy team, we don't talk to them about being a second team. You know, you're a Victorian state team and that has a level of pride, and we know we're bottom ages and we're going to be challenged at some point during the week. And first game, you know, Global Academy and then WA, who won it 2 years ago, Metro in 18. So it's not going to be an easy week by any means, but what you can guarantee is that we'll continue to play hard and our time will come, we'll knock somebody off. And if we get to a quarter final, you know, you don't want to play us.
How would you go? How do you think you'll go against ACT?
They're not in our pool. Yeah. So, but yeah, I've got something for Ash.
Here we go.
We might have to do a live split down there for that game.
That might be the case. Anyone you're not looking forward to playing?
No, I think being...
There's no allegiances back to Queensland or Tasmania or anything like that?
I'm Victorian, mate. So,
it depends on how they're going at the time, if he's Victorian or not.
But I think the Navy team has, I guess, some of that freedom to it. You know, like, we're not scared of anyone. Yes, we'd like to beat everyone, but the main point is to seeing the growth over these kids, with these kids, you know, as bottom ages making transition into 20s. You know, for all of those coaches out there that think, you know, I shouldn't have to coach this or I shouldn't have to coach that, me and my coaching staff are going to have that through the week. It's going to be block outs. It's going to be, you know, those types of things, because these kids in their own age group have been some of the bigger, stronger, faster kids. So, but now they're not, and they're all bottom age. So we're going to have to coach that constantly.
He says freedom, not realizing Coops is his assistant coach. There's no freedom with Coops, and this is your assistant coach. What rules have you got in for Coops?
We're actually trying a new thing where the head coach has the option to make the assistant coach sit in the grandstand.
Oh, okay. Look forward to chatting with Coops mid-second quarter at some stage.
Yeah.
And he's given you a couple of play calls that maybe you haven't...
Coops has been great. Obviously did it. The roles were reversed last year and it was good.
Excellent. Well, best of luck for that until you run into the other Victorian team. Then I'm on Team Cotter, but we'll see how you go. I'm joking.
Either way, what a fun game that would be.
Absolutely. I'm hoping for quadruple overtime. We'll see how it goes on that end. So that does wrap us up for this week. So given pretty much everyone is down in Geelong next week, we will have a Talking Split episode, but it won't be the traditional Talking Split episode. So we'll throw in that interview that we have with Will Weaver that's in the bank, and we'll put that out there. So, coaches, thanks very much for jumping into the podcast. It is great to be back for season 9, and we will absolutely be talking to you over the next couple of weeks. But get down to Geelong next week and support the Victorian teams at AJC's, and we'll catch you all next time. Love, tune in, enjoy the tribe.